Okay, good evening, everyone. This week's parasha is Parashas Korach, Tavshanai and Tess, page 820. Just want to let everybody know that for the next 2 weeks, there will not be a class. My wife and I are going to Eretz Yisrael for 2 weeks. We will, Emes Hashem, resume on the 22nd. Okay, so let's begin from the beginning of the parasha. Page 820, Perek Tes Zayin, Pasuk Aleph, chapter 16, verse 1. Vayikach Kareb ben Yitzhar ben Kas ben Levi v'dasan v'aviram b'nei Eliyav v'ain ben Pelas b'nei Reuven. Kareach, the son of Yitzhar, the son of Kas, son of Levi, took en dasan and aviram, the sons of Eliyav, en on the son of Pelas, the sons of Reuven. Vayakumu lefnei Moshe v'neshuv v'nei Yisrael v'mishim v'masayim. They stood in front of Moshe, together with 250 men of the b'nei Yisrael. Nesiyei Eda, kriyei Moed, anshei Shem, princes of the assembly, those who are called for assemblage, people of name. Vayikalu al Moshe v'al Aaron, they assembled on Moshe and Aaron, vayomru alayhem, they said to them, Rav lochem, you've taken too much, kecholo edo kulam kadeshim, the entire assembly are all holy, b'seichem Hashem, God is in their midst, madua tisnasu al kal Hashem, why do you raise yourselves above the assembly of Hashem? So Korach and his entourage and his group come to Moshe and complain, you've taken too much. Everybody's holy. Why do you overbear yourself? Why do you exalt yourselves over the assembly of Hashem? Now, I want to talk about tonight how Ibn Ezra approaches Korach and his whole group's rebellion against Moshe. I'm going to start off with the Ibn Ezra's approach, and then we're going to go to the Ramban's approach.
Excuse me. The 250 men, are some of the same people with the spies?
No.
No, definitely not.
No. Now, the Ibn Ezra says, the first thing Ibn Ezra starts off with is that if I were to ask you, when did Korach's rebellion take place? At what point in the desert? Well, if you look at the Chumash, it would seem to be happening after the sin of the spies, because last week's Parsha Shlach was the sin of the spies. Now comes Parsha's Korach. If you go ahead and, yeah, that's for sure. It's after the golden calf, it's after the sin of the spies, and then comes Korach. The Ibn Ezra says no. The Ibn Ezra seems to, as the Ramban points out, the Ibn Ezra freely interprets the Torah, not in a chronological order, and he says that Korach's rebellion took place in, I'm going to read it, Zehadavar Haya B'midbar Sinai. This took place in the Sinai desert, Kasher Nischalfu HaBachayrim V'Nivdlu HaLeviim. When basically the Levium when the firstborn were replaced by the Levium, this is when Korach's rebellion took place. We know there was a point where Moshe said, Hashem told Moshe that the firstborn will no more have their status of those who do the service in the Mishkan. Rather, those who are going to do the service are going to be the Levium. And from the Levium, you're going to have Aaron and his sons who are the highest, who are the Kohanim. But there was a point where the Bukharim lost their status as the Kohanim, as they were then, and those who would serve in the Mishkan, and now it was given to the Levium. This is the point where Korach's rebellion took place.
After the two sons of Aaron were killed.
Right. But the point is, it happened after the Levium were replaced by the firstborn. So now the Ibn Ezra goes through everyone, meaning we know that as we read Parshas Korach, you've got Korach, You've got Dasan and Aviram, you've got Om ben Peles, you've got 250 men who are also from the tribe of Reuven, great people from the tribe of Reuven. Later on, you have the entire Jewish people gathering to see what is going on in everybody's mind. What is everybody thinking here that they're coming to question Moshe Rabbeinu? Says Ibn Ezra, Ki chashvu Yisrael, the Jewish people thought, Shemosha Adonenu, that Moshe our master, Asa Midaitai, he acted on his own. But say it's gadula la'achiv, to give greatness to his brother. Gam b'nei kahas, also to the children of kahas, shem krev may love, that they're his relatives. Ulecho b'nei Levi, and to the entire tribe of Levi, shem mishpachtoi, for they are his family. Okay, so you're starting off with Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael, the Jewish, I believe he's referring to the Jew people as a whole, who seem to join up to, at least as we read later, watch what would happen to Korach and his assembly. And he says that they thought that when they saw that the Levium replaced the firstborn, that Moshe was acting on his own. Number one, he made his brother the Kohen Gadol. Nepotism on that part. He gave the Bnei Kehas, that are his direct relatives, he gave them the most important parts of the Mishkan to carry. And then to the whole Bnei Levi, he gave them a special status by replacing the firstborn. Moshe is being suspected of, from the point of the rest of the Jewish people, the non-Levium, they are suspecting him of on his own giving special status to his family. V'ha-Levium. Now, the Levium of this group, which would mean Korach, Kashru Alav, they came to Moshe, they argued with Moshe, they challenged Moshe, Bavor ha-Yosem Nesunim La'Aron al-Labanav, because the Levium were given to serve Aaron and his children. So the Levium may have a special status, but again, they're really subordinate to Aaron and his sons. The Bnei Levi didn't like that. Again, this was something that the Levium thought Moshe was doing on behalf of his brother Aaron. V'kashar Dasan v'Aviram. Now, we have Dasan and Aviram also. What was their problem? Now, Dasan and Aviram were not Levium. They were from the tribe of Reuven. So why did they join up? So the answer is not because we know Dasan and Aviram always made trouble. Right. That's not the answer that Ibn Ezra says. V'kashar Dasan v'Aviram v'avor sheheser ha'bacharim e'Reuven aviem v'nitna li'Yosef. Because the firstborn right was removed from Reuven and given to Yosef. Meaning this, what did that mean? That means that Reuven was the firstborn. He should have gotten a double portion in the land of Israel. And that's not what's going to happen, because in Parshas Bamidbar, when everybody is counted, the double tribe is Yosef. Okay? And therefore, the tribe of Reuven are upset over the fact that now the firstborn right was taken from them and given to Yosef. Ulai chashdu, perhaps they suspected Moshe, but were Yeshua Mesharsai, because of Yeshua. Yeshua is from the tribe of Ephraim. So out of favoritism to his prize student, he now gave his prize student, his tribe, the double portion. Gam Korach b'char haya, kichen kasev. Korach was also a firstborn. So he had two problems. He had a problem over the fact that he was a lady who was now subordinate to the Kohanim, but he was also a firstborn. Now, again, he may have been a firstborn, but it was from the tribe of Reuven. What's bothering him about being a firstborn? But we'll see. V'degel Reuven choyne v'negev v'koyrach b'negev ha-mishkan kibub b'nei kahas v'eilin etzieho eidah hayu b'choyrim v'mirim akrivim esa oyles akein lakum achtes. What the Ibn Ezra is saying here is, okay, the 250 men, they're from the tribe of Reuven, okay? Now, what is their problem? Now, one problem would be, even though the pasuk doesn't say, but one problem would be, if they're from the tribe of Reuven, they have the same problem as Dasan and Aviram. But Ibn Ezra seems to be saying that these princes of the assembly, together with Korach, they were all firstborn. As firstborn, they were the ones who originally brought the sacrifices, because we know that at Har Sinai, when sacrifices were brought, who offered those sacrifices? The Bechayrim, the firstborn. There was one time that they acted like Kohanim. So you're talking about Korach acted like a Kohen. You had the Nesi'ei Ha'eda, these men of assembly, these princes of the assembly, says Ibn Ezra, they were firstborn, and they had already offered burnt offerings, meaning they already tasted the Kahuna and it was taken away from them. And therefore, the Ibn Ezra kind of jumps and he says, we know that how did Moshe test everybody? He told them, bring fire pans, bring offerings. You know why he said that to them? Because they already had experience with that. They had experience with that. And that would be the means by which they'd be tested. This is what, not only the experience, this was their problem, this was their claim. Their claim was, you took this away from us. Now, then he shows how, from the psukim, how each one of these ideas fit. V'haraya al zeha pirish meifes hamate shro kol Yisrael ki Hashem bach hashevet Levi tachas abuchayrim al kein karsa v'tachat v'naysam k'tuduna al zehoisa. We know that after Korach was swallowed up, and after there was a plague in which Aaron had to offer k'tarets in the midst of everyone, and that stopped the plague, again, the Jewish people complained. So what did Hashem say? Hashem said, all the tribes, all the heads of the tribes have to bring their staff. Everybody's staff, including a staff from Aaron representing Levi, was put by the Aren. That staff blossomed. Now, that staff blossomed, and after that, no more complaints. Now, that staff showed that the tribe of Levi was chosen. That's all it showed. That's what it showed. It showed that it was the tribe of Levi, because it was each tribe put a staff, and it was the staff that represented the tribe of Levi that blossomed. That shows what? That shows the tribe of Levi was chosen. And that's what quieted down the complaints. Says Ibn Ezra, you see from here that what was the main complaint of the Jewish people? The main complaint of the Jewish people was, why did Levi get chosen instead of the why did they place the firstborn? Well, once the miracle with the staffs took place, in which Hashem shows, I chose the tribe of Levi, there's no more complaints. Because says Ibn Ezra, the complaint was that they thought Moshe was the one who replaced the firstborn for Levi, and Hashem shows, no, it's not. It's Levi. I'm the one who chose Levi. So that's his first proof to his explanation, that you see from the fact that the tribe, the blossoming of the staff of the tribe of Levi, quieted the complaints, you see that was their complaint about the fact that the tribe of Levi was chosen. What does Moshe say? I'm proving this to show I didn't do it on my own. That's clear that there were that their claim was he's doing it on his own. We just read that what did Korach and everybody say? Everybody's holy. So he says on that, the Ibn Ezra says, what does it mean, everybody's holy? What does that mean? So Rashi has his explanation. But the Ibn Ezra says, everybody's holy means firstborn come from everyone. And firstborn, we know they're sanctified. Hashem said, Kadoshim Kol Bachar, sanctify for me all the firstborn. They were the ones who brought the sacrifices first. So they always were the Kadoshim. They always were the holy ones, the special ones, from amongst the entire people. That's what says the Ibn Ezra. What does it mean? Kulam Kadoshim, everybody's holy. That means all the firstborn from everybody are holy. And that is his proof to show that, again, one of the issues here were, there are a number of issues. You had an issue of Moshe Rabbeinu making up things. You had an issue of the Levim replacing the firstborn. And you see that is a problem by the fact that that was their problem, because their claim was everybody's holy. What does everybody holy mean? Everybody holy means, says Ibn Ezra, that means the firstborn, because they were the holy ones. So therefore, the Ibn Ezra learns that what's happening here is, again, let's just quickly review it. Korach's rebellion is taking place not after the sin of the spies. It's taking place after the Levim were replaced the firstborn. At that point, that brought about that the Jewish people were not happy with that replacement. And therefore, they thought that Moshe Rabbeinu was playing nepotism by giving his brother the Kuna Gadoila, B'nai Ka, special status in the Levim, and the whole tribe of Levi, which is tribe, to replace the firstborn. The Levim, Korach, the Levim amongst this group, didn't like becoming subordinate to the Kohanim. Dustin and Aviram, if you're from the tribe of Reuven, you're upset because Reuven lost the firstborn right to Yosef. Okay? Reuven lost the firstborn right to Yosef. And again, according to Ibn Ezra, everybody is suspecting Moshe of doing this on his own. And in this case, it's on behalf of his student Yoshua from the tribe of Yosef. And we know that Korach was from the firstborn, was a firstborn. The princes of the assembly, says Ibn Ezra, were firstborn. They all already had a chance to be the Kohanim, was taken away from them. And this is what all led them at this point to complaining against Moshe and to accuse him of doing it on his own. So Ibn Ezra makes it very broad in the sense that Rashi typically seems to be focused on Korach complaining about the appointments that were done done regarding who's the head of Levi, who's the Kohen Gadol. It was Korach who seemed to be the one that was mostly challenging Moshe in the sense of his choices. According to Ibn Ezra, it's much broader. It's much broader. It's a lot of more. It's not just about the Kahuna. It's about Kahuna. It's about Leviah. What happened to the firstborn? It's a much broader complaint, and it's a complaint that took place again when the firstborn were replaced by the Leviim. This is what brought all the complaints out. Now, what's really interesting about Ibn Ezra's explanation, which the Ramban is going to focus on it, is the fact that he explains that Dasan and Aviram with the tribe of Reuven, their problem was that the firstborn right was taken away from Reuven and given to Yosef. Who did that?
Yaakov
did that a long time ago. And according to Ibn Ezra, they're already saying that, no, Moshe made it up. Moshe made that up. The same way Moshe doing all these things on his own, that he also did on his own. So they're safer, Haggis, Leparsha, Satira, that brings out a very interesting point. If they're going so far back to question people losing the firstborn right, they're ready to go, there's one thing you want to question Moshe's actions. Right. But you're already going back to something that was always accepted as Yaakov's act, right? And you're already challenging that. You know what else you should challenge then? Yaakov and Esav. This challenge was a challenge that was going to go all the way to should essentially go back to the essence of the Jewish people. So again, this was a very, very dangerous claim that was being made, and it was so broad that it really could go back and touch on the whole beginning of the Jewish people, the whole start of the Jewish people. But this is how the Ibn Ezra learns what was happening here. Okay. Now,
the Kohanim are all related to Aaron.
They all come from Aaron.
From blood related.
Yes.
Which was another problem for.
But this is right at the beginning. This was right at the beginning.
Right, like literally there's a whole new tribe that's coming just from Aaron.
Okay.
And they can't be part of you.
Okay, okay.
There's a Levi too.
Okay. Now, the Ramban does not appreciate how the Ibn Ezra is taking things out of chronological order. We know there is such a thing as the Torah doesn't work in chronological order, but the Ramban says, that's only when you actually, it's pretty clear it's happening that way. And there's a reason for it. Why? There doesn't seem to be a reason here. I mean, he has a nice explanation of Ibn Ezra, but doesn't seem to have a reason to say that this didn't happen after the sin of the spies. And therefore, says the Ramban, what's happening here is like this. Korach's episode, this episode with Korach, this rebellion of Korach, took place after the sin of the spies. Okay. And what started everything? What started the rebellion? Says the Ramban, Vanochen Bidrash Shakras Karach Hamasias and Litzafan Kamama Rabbeinu, the Kinegam Ba'aron Kamashanemar Bikashlem Kuhuna. Here he agrees with Rashi. What started everything? Korach was from you had the Kahus, that part of that son of Levi had four sons, Amram, Yitzhar, Chevron, Uziel. Moshe are from Amram, Korach is from Yitzhar. Korach expected that if he was going to get the position of the Nasi, of the prince over the entire tribe of Levi, that didn't happen, went to his younger cousin. That caused him to be jealous. And that got him to start not only being unhappy with the fact that he didn't get that position, but he already then took it as far as demanding the Kohanim Gadol also. So that's Korach's problem, says the Ramban. It starts up with a jealousy that he wasn't made the prince of the tribe of. I'm sorry, wasn't made the prince of. No, he wasn't made the prince of the family of Kahus. Rather, he wasn't made the prince of the family of Kahus, and that led into being jealous of the Kohen Gadol. That's Korach's issue. Dasan and Aviram, says the Ramban, do not have a problem with the fact that Reuben is not the Bechor anymore, because that was Yaakov's doing. That has nothing to do with Moshe Rabbeinu. But rather, their problem is, as we will read later, if you take a look on page 822, when Moshe wants to speak to Dasan and Aviram, so this is Perek Yud Beis, by Yishlach Moshe l'korei to Dasan v'Aviram b'nei Eliyav, Moshe sent to call to Dasan and Aviram the sons of Eliyav, by Yom Rilu Nale, they said, we will not come up. Is it not enough that you brought us up from a land of flowing milk and honey to kill us in the desert? That you want a lord over us also. You have not even brought us to a land of flowing milk and honey. When Dasan and Aviram have their complaints focus on the fact that they are not going into Eretz Israel. That's their focus. Their focus is, get us out of Egypt. You just told us in last week's parasha, we're going to all die here in the desert. So we're nowhere. That's their problem. Their problem is the fact that they are going to die in the desert, not going to Eretz Yisrael. One second. Now, Vina Yisrael b'yais midbar Sinai. Now, says the Ramban, why did this all happen now? How did it all happen now? Why didn't it happen now? And the answer is, says the Ramban, when the Jewish people were in the desert, Moshe Rabbeinu saved them. They had a sin of the golden calf, a very serious sin. Not that many people died from it. Moshe Rabbeinu was able to pray for them and to save them and to help them. And because of that Moshe Rabbeinu saved them, they loved him tremendously. And if anybody would have tried to have rebelled against Moshe, which they could have at that point already, they could have already, because again, at that point of time, or before the sin of the spies, Korach already didn't get the position, and his jealousy should have been there, okay? And therefore, in essence, he could have started everything then. Could have started everything then. But at that point of time, Moshe Rabbeinu saved them. And therefore, Korach could not start anything and start complaining because it would fall on deaf ears. No one would join up with him. However, once the Jewish people continued in the desert, and they got burned by a fire in Tav'era, and they died, and many died in Kibbutz Hatava, meaning many people had already fallen and died. And Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't coming through. And then comes the sin of the spies. And although Moshe Rabbeinu died, they shouldn't all be killed, they shouldn't all be wiped out, they were going to all die in the desert. At that point, Moshe Rabbeinu was not as popular as he was before. He was not popular. And that's when Korach saw, like a good politician, now is the time to swoop in. Now is time to take advantage of the people's disappointment with Moshe and to go ahead and complain and say that you know, what, this is not right. Why did you go ahead and pick Aaron instead of why are you showing nepotism to your brother? Now the Ramban continues and he says, V'hayom oirim b'libam ki yavayu lahem. So now at this point of time, he says, so you have by the spies that again Moshe Rabbeinu could not take off the decree about dying in the desert. You had the spies who were all princes, important people, dying in a plague, and everyone's going to die in the desert. At that point, they became bitter, and they said to themselves, says the Ramban, "Ki yavayu lahem b'divrei Moshe taklus." You know, Moshe Rabbeinu makes problems for us, or at least things don't go well under Moshe. This was the time for him now to dispute Moshe's decisions. And he thought people would agree. And he was right. This is what it means when Dasan and Aviram said to kill us in the desert. What do you mean to kill us in the desert? You brought us to this place, and you not fulfill your promise of taking us to a land flowing in milk and honey. Do you know why now the Jewish people are going to consider what Korach says? And you see from Dasan and Aviram's words what's on the minds of the Jewish people. It's because at this point of time, where the Jewish people see that Moshe Rabbeinu was not able to get them, was not able to save them as he did before, and they're going to die in the desert, and Moshe Rabbeinu has not come through for them, they're saying to themselves, look, you promised us we're going to enter the land of Eretz Yisrael, and it's not happening. You know what? You're telling our children they are going to get there, like it's not Parsha? We don't believe that. We don't think they're going to make it either. The same, you didn't keep the promise to us, you're not going to keep the promise to them. And therefore, it was at this point of time that it worked perfect for Korach to go ahead and to lead his rebellion. Because the Jewish people were bitter, and therefore now is the time that he could come and challenge Moshe. Because again, they're questioning Moshe's promises of going to the land of Israel, even for their children. Now let's question Moshe on everything.
But Dathan is a member of the Reuven.
That's correct.
So he was not a Levi in Egypt. He worked very hard.
That may very well be.
And it's like fake news. They said they came from milk and honey.
Yeah, but it was still a better place to live food-wise than dying in the
mind,
desert.
It's like you.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah. I understand what you're saying. But at the end of the day, you know, in their mind, right, again, in the mode of complaining, right, part of the complaining is, look, we had it better there instead of dying in a desert, and they're saying, we're going to die in the desert, and you can keep your promise, our children are going to die in the desert. And therefore, this is why everything took place after the sin of the spies. And the Ramban says that it's also, he says, we could say that all those who assembled, kulam b'chayris, they were all firstborn. Ki'alkein chara lahem ala kahuna. They're upset over the kahuna. V'chein amar lahem Moshe sheyikchu matnitz k'menhagam arishon. Therefore Moshe told them to take the fire pans as they had done previously. V'yiskala hadavar im yivchar Hashem b'hem b'kehanim. And then it'll become revealed who Hashem will choose. So, before the Ramban spoke about Korach, he spoke about Dasan and Aviram and the people. And these 250 people, what is their issue exactly? So their issue could be like Dasan and Aviram complaining about the fact that they're going to die in the desert. He also says that it's possible to say that they were all firstborn, that all lost what they had before, and therefore they were upset with that. And therefore, as Ibn Ezra says, Moshe says, well, if the problem is that you're upset over the fact that you lost your ability to serve in the Mishkan, this is how we're going to test it. You're going to go back to doing a service, and that will show who is the one that Hashem wants.
So Rambam is a grandson of Rambam?
No. This is the Ramban. No relationship.
And when did he live?
The Ramban, I don't know the exact years.
Okay,
let's move on. Now, let's move on. So now, with once the Ramban speaks about the fact that Korach was upset over the fact that Elitzaphan was became the prince over the family of Kehas, and he became also jealous of Aaron. Let's talk a little bit about jealousy. Now, we know that the 10th commandment that we have, the last of the Aseret Sadibris, reads, Le'sachmed beis re'echa, do not covet the house of your friend. Le'sachmed eishes re'echa, don't covet your friend's wife. Ve'avdei v'amasei v'sharei v'chamerei, his servant, his slave, his maidservant, his ox, his donkey, v'chala shel re'ach, and anything your friend has. Now, if you look in the Rambam, and the Rambam explains what exactly is this prohibition of l'sachmei, not to covet, according to Rambam, just coveting, I see something that's yours and I really like it, that you don't transgress the prohibition by that. According to the Rambam, to transgress l'sachmei, you have to make a plan, and you have to go over to the person and pressure him, and then eventually take it. That's what l'sachmei is. In Parshas Veschanan, where it says lo sisava, don't covet, don't desire. The other Ramban says it means that you make a plan and you decide, okay, I'm going to follow this plan to get this thing that I want. But according to the Rambam, just to covet in your heart is not the prohibition. But it's clearly the root of the prohibition. It's clearly the root of the problem. The fact that you're coveting something, the fact that you're jealous of another person's thing. That's the root. And therefore, the Satmar Rebbe Zatzal gave the following thought on this last part of the Aseret Sadibris, V'chala Shel Re'echa, everything that's to your friend. Again, because even though we say the prohibition itself is not just on coveting, but again, just coveting is the root of the problem, and therefore, you know, it is included in what the Torah is saying. So he focused on the words V'chala Shel Re'echa. It says, don't covet these specific things, and don't covet everything that your friend has. So he suggested that in a homiletical way, do you know what everything that your friend has includes? He said it means like this. Everybody, there is no one in this world who does not have their load of tzaras. There's nobody who's free of tzaras. And if you want what someone else has, the Torah is saying, you can't cherry pick. You can't pick and choose and say, oh, I want this, but I don't want that. It's a package deal. The Rebbe Shlomo gives, whatever the Rebbe Shlomo gives to a person, it all goes together. If you covet and want what somebody else has, know that when you're coveting his thing, you're coveting everything that your friend has. If you want to take his thing, then you can't just take his thing. You have to now, it comes along with everything else. So therefore, the Torah says, don't covet. Don't covet his land. Don't covet his servant. Don't covet his animal. Don't cover anything that he has. Because if you're going to covet one thing, everything is going to come along. And this is really, you know, a lesson about, you know, people tend to look at other people and say, oh, that guy has it better. Perfect. Right? They see what they have. I wish I had what he has. I wish I had the life that he has. There's a saying that goes that if everybody could come together and unburden their load of tzaras on a table. Right? Everybody takes all their tzaras, put it on a table. And then everybody's told, okay, you can now take whichever packet bundle of tzaris you want. What would everybody rush to take back? What would everybody rush to take? They rush to take back their tzaris that they unloaded beforehand. Because the Ribbono Shel Olam gives every person a tailor-made package. It's a package that's made specially for him. It fits him. It's what he needs to fulfill his purpose in life. The Alter von Kellum said, it probably sounds better in Yiddish, but the Alter von Kellum said, no one knows whose shoes are hurting them. That means to say, you look at a person, oh, everything looks great. Everything looks great. Oh, I wish I was like him. I wish life was what's going on by him. You have no idea what else can be going on in his life, what kind of tzaras he has. And therefore, these are all ideas of not coveting. Stop thinking about what other people have. Stop thinking everybody has it better. And instead, focus and appreciate and be happy with what you have. That was the problem of Korach. The foundation of jealousy is where we see somebody else's thing, we think that we should have it also, and at the end of the day, everything that we have, the good, what we see as bad, what we know is really the good, it is all what Hashem gives us for what we need to fulfill our mission in life, and what somebody else has is just not meant for us. It's not meant to, it doesn't fit us. Okay, let's now go to, let's go back, and actually, not go back. Okay, let's look at page 824. This is after Dasan and Aviram basically really tell off Moshe. And, you know, we read before, let's go back actually to page 822, Pasuk Yidalid. Af lo yal eretz sanu. Not, you have not even taken us to a land flowing with milk and honey, but and given us an inheritance of field and vineyard. Ha'ena enoshamem tenaker. Were you to poke up the eyes of these people referring to themselves? Loi nala, we're not coming up. Moshe, now if we would just look at these words, we would translate these words as Moshe became very angry. Now it doesn't say Vayichar Af. Very often when the wording is getting angry, it says Vayichar Af. It doesn't say that, Vayichar Af. It says Vayichar the Moshe Ma'id, which we would translate as Moshe became very angry. But Rashi says it means nitztayer ad lama'id. Moshe became very distressed. This is not about anger here. This is about being distressed. Anger means you take this personal. You feel hurt. And the hurt gets you angry. It doesn't say, like I said, it doesn't say vayichar af here. It just says vayichar. And really, Rashi is based on a medrash. The medrash says that Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to speak to Dasan and Aviram. And what did they do? They said, we're not coming. They weren't going to come to speak to him. They just sent their nasty message, but they didn't want to deal with him. Vayichal Moshe. So Moshe became angry or distressed. Lama why? She'adam hadonim chaveirim asfakeach meshivai. A person who's having an issue with his friend, and he wants to have a discussion with him, and he's able to have a discussion, a back and forth. Yesh lo nachas ruach. He feels calm. He feels satisfied. But if he has an issue with his friend and he wants to talk to him, the friend doesn't want to talk, doesn't want to respond, that causes him terrible distress. You know, it's better to basically have an argument with someone than be ignored.
That's what the Rambam says, right? You should go and talk to the person.
And that's what Moshe tried doing. Because Dasan and Aviram didn't even want to talk to him, therefore, Vayichal Moshe, not that he's angry, because he feels slighted, but he's upset, he's distressed over the fact that he wants to have a discussion with his friend, and the friend is ignoring him. So what did Moshe say after that? Vayomer El Hashem, Moshe says to Hashem, Al Tevin El Minchasam, do not turn to their gift. Lo Yechamar Echad Mehem Nasasi, I didn't take one donkey from them. Lo Re'oiseis Echad Mehem, I never harmed one of them. So what exactly is Moshe referring to when he says, do not turn to their gift? So Rashi says two explanations. Lefi pshutai, according to the simple explanation, haktayra shemakrim lefanecha machar, the ktayras that Moshe told them all to offer the next day, al tefen alayim, don't turn to it. Moshe here is turning to Hashem and saying that when the 250 men and Korach bring the ktayras, don't accept it, don't turn to it. Umedrashai, the Midrashic interpretation is, Amar Moshe said, Yadei ani sheyesh lam chelek besmidei tzibur. I know that all these people who are part of the Bnei Yisrael all have a portion in the communal daily sacrifices. Avchelkam lo yikuba alafanecha l'ratzai. Their portion should not be accepted before you. Tanichenu ha'esh v'leisechlenu. The fire should leave it and not consume it. According to the second interpretation, the mincha, the gift, is referring to every part of every person in Klal Yisrael had a portion in the carbon tamid. Right, twice a day there was the continuous sacrifice. It was a burnt offering brought one in the morning, one in the afternoon, on behalf of Klal Yisrael. It's called the carbon tamid, the constant carbon. Everybody, that's a carbon brought for everybody. Everybody has a portion in it. Moshe Rabbeinu was praying, asking Hashem that with the portion that these people have in those karbanos, it should not be accepted, should even be consumed. However minute amount that could possibly be. It should not be consumed. So according to the second interpretation, Moshe is saying that the sacrifice that all of Klal Yisrael have a portion in, they should lose their portion in it. Their action is so terrible that they should have nothing. They're completely out of the loop. They should completely be out of the Klal Yisrael to the point that their portion of the carbon tamid should not be consumed. But let's go back to the first pshat in Rashi. Rashi's first pshat is that Moshe turns to Hashem and says, do not accept the k'tores that they're going to offer tomorrow. So the obvious question is, the k'tores is the test. That's the whole test to see who's the Kohen Gadol, who's not. That means it's not supposed to work. So why is Moshe going and saying to Hashem, don't accept it? That's the whole point of the test. Not only that, we know that Rashi already wrote, Rashi says earlier, when Moshe says, Zeis asu kochulach hamachtetz, this is what you should do, take the fire pans. Basically, Moshe says that, why did Moshe tell him to do this? So he says, look, the Ketores is the most beloved sacrifice of all sacrifices, but it can be poisonous. It can be destructive. Look what happened to Nadav and Avihu. And therefore, he warned them and he said, V'ha'ish ashiv char Hashem hu ha'kadosh. The man that God chose is who he is holy. Kfar b'kdushasa, he's already holy. We don't know. Moshe has to say, Hashem chooses, he's the holy one. It's obvious he's the holy one. Rather, Moshe said to them, Hareini oimer lachem, shalaitis chayvu. I'm letting you know, don't do yourselves in. Whoever is the chosen one, he is going to come out alive. Everybody else is going to perish. That means when Moshe first told them, he's already telling them that they're going to perish. And now he has to daven to Hashem that it shouldn't be that the Torah shouldn't be accepted. Why is he doing that? That was the whole test, and he already said they're going to die. So I was thinking, what's the matter?
He didn't say you will die, say Isha Sherif Har Hashem.
So Rashi says, Hareini Omer Lacham, I'm telling you, he's alluding to them that you should know you're not going to make it. So he's already saying that they're not going to make it. And now he needs to go ahead and daven to Hashem, don't accept our k'tiris. That's what he's saying to begin with, it's not going to be accepted. Why does he have to daven? So perhaps the answer we could say, according to Rashi, is that perhaps, they could have brought the k'tiris. They could have come in, like Nadav and Avihu. They could have come into the Mishkan. They could have brought the k'tiris. It would have been accepted as something, and they would die. And then they die. So the dying would be the proof that they shouldn't have done it. But it would have been accepted. Moshe says to the Rebbeinu Shalom, no, nothing. Not even accepted. They're going to die. They cannot even make it in. They cannot even bring it at all. Perhaps that's explained according to Rashi. Now, the Arachayim, when he explains what Moshe was davening about, and he said, Moshe says, Al Tefen, don't turn to their mincha. Don't turn to the mincha. So again, based on what's Moshe concerned about, says the Arachayim, first of all, that the reason he said don't turn, hakavana letzad shara haflos sinas harishoyim imoy, the fact that he saw how Dasan and Aviram and Kairach behaved towards him, mizeh hikar hayoysam bechinas hara gomer asher tivoy lisnoy bechinas hatoiv sinas mavas b'leisiba. It was clear to Moshe at this point that Kairach, Dasan and Aviram had basically, pardon the expression, they really went over to the other side. This was nothing. If this is about a war against the good, if they could act like this to Moshe, Moshe understood that this was not something about him. This was all about a battle between good and bad. They had sunk to a point of despising good. And therefore, he says to Hashem, "Al teifno mechasim." Do not turn to their gift. V'akavana bazeh. The intention there is letzad she'ein lecha adam she'ein b'yaday mitzvus u'maisim tovim. Everybody has mitzvus that they've done. There is no person who hasn't done a good deed. U'kvar kadam lanu, and we already have a principle, an established principle. She'ena kadosh baruch hu mekapeach schar kol beri uberia. The Bnei Shalom never holds back reward. Everything gets its reward. V'afilu shal mishayim, t'chsev kelem u'nevein avel. A Rashi does a mitzvah, he gets rewarded. But, okay, and he brings it. Shows us from a Gemara in a Gemara Sanhedrin. Asher alken chash Moshe. Therefore, Moshe was concerned. She'tamed lohem eize mitzvah she'beyadam she'aschus tayla. We know that sometimes you could have a mitzvah and a merit that's going to protect you. That is what Moshe was concerned about. That amongst these men, who are great men, that they may have some kind of a schus, some kind of a merit that's going to protect them. And therefore he says, don't turn to their gift. Which gift? Pirish afilu zechus shekvar hegiya mincha l'Hashem. The gift here means a mitzvah that's already come up as a gift to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. And the Rebbeinu Shel Olam would have considered it as a merit to protect him. Moshe says to Hashem, don't look at it. Ignore it.
How did he do that?
One second. Now, so, but the Aruch Chaim seems to be learning that everybody has chusim and chusim can protect you. It would seem to me that the Aruch Chaim is saying that the chus would protect them from dying. Not like we said before, they would die and be able to be the mitzvah. It sounds like they would be protected from dying. Now again, if they're not going to die, and they're going to bring the kateres, then there's no test. So I don't know exactly what to say, but perhaps according to the Aruch Chaim, maybe according to the Aruch Chaim, it's the other way. The merit would help them protect them from dying, but they wouldn't be able to bring the keteris either. Meaning the merit would prevent them from bringing the keteris, so they wouldn't die. Moshe Rabbeinu says no. At this point, they've come to such a point of evil and corruption. They don't deserve to live. They might be protected by some kind of a mitzvah they did in the past. Moshe says, don't do that. Don't look at that. Okay. Now, Vimtoima, ask the Arachayim. Echivatel midasa yisbarach lanashim ahem la'abas mishpatam. If the rule is Hashem doesn't hold back reward, then how does Moshe daven that he should? Was that your question?
No, it's sort of presumptuous of Moshe telling God what to do.
Tzadik can do that. But look at this. Let's see what he says here. Here also, his question is, how does Moshe stop Hashem? How can Moshe nullify Hashem's actions towards these people, meaning to have them have a merit? Da, says the Aruch Chaim, ki atzadikim yesh koyach b'hem lavkia zechus hanimtzis l'rishayim k'shir shayim uchlat nimara. V'usayid tzadik meishal yiras elikim. Says the Aruch Chaim, something he said last week also, tzadikim have special power. Tzadikim are given the power, Hashem gives them the power, that even something that Hashem, so to speak, would not do in his own, if they request it.
Even bad things.
It's bad in the sense that even though, let's not use the word bad, even though they may deserve reward for their mitzvah, the tzaddik can say that this person has come to such a point of evil that he doesn't deserve even that. We know that in halacha, the sages have the ability to take away your property. So, in a similar way, a tzaddik has the ability to take away your mitzvah. But again, that's only because of the fact that they sunk to such a low level. Now, the rest of the pasuk, says the Aruch Chaim, is where Moshe Rabbeinu has to explain, now wait a minute, you're deciding, Moshe, that they have sunk to this really, really low level of evil. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu has to kind of back himself up with this. Because at the end of the day, let's say their claims are wrong. Their claims are wrong. But you know, they're not picking on you. Maybe they're not picking on you for no reason. Maybe their rebellion against you is because you did do something to them wrong. Right? Good. They say you made up things and you lied and you made up things. That's not true.
Yeah.
But maybe the reason why they're coming after you is because of something that you did to them. So instead of going ahead and saying that, no, if they're acting like this, they must have really sunk to the worst level that could be. Maybe they're reacting to something that you did. And that Moshe Rabbeinu responds two things. The first thing he says is, Moshe Rabbeinu says, Loi chamarachamehem nasasi. I never took anything from them. I never abused my power by them. I didn't even take from them what I'm supposed to take from them. They can't have any complaints that I misused my power over them because I didn't even take from them what I'm supposed to. And then not only that, and I didn't hurt any of them. Moshe Rabbeinu can get up and testify and say, yes, I know I never did anything wrong to them. And if I never did anything wrong to them, for them to go ahead and now to challenge what's happening here must be because they have sunk to this absolute level of evil, and therefore any of the merits that they have they don't deserve. And therefore, they should be destroyed when they bring the
contempt. As you just mentioned, he's accusing them not of challenging him, but of refusing to even discuss them. That's the last thing that brought him to this position.
Okay.
After challenging, it's okay, as long as he wanted to talk to them.
Correct.
Right? The moment they say, we don't consider you.
If it comes to the point that they're not even going to talk to him, that was the sign. But even then, fine. But even then, he needs to still, so to speak, say to the Baruch Shalom, but again, if you're going to say that, I want to talk to me because of what I've done to them, that is clear. I never did anything to them that they should be able to have that kind of a complaint.
But he's telling God something that God should know himself.
This is something that the tzaddik, this is what a tzaddik does when a tzaddik wants to actually rid the world. Sorry, let me just explain. This is what the tzaddik does when the tzaddik sees evil in the world and there is and he is trying to remove evil from the world. This is part of what the tzaddik does. Okay, so the Rabbeinu Shalom, Rabbeinu Shalom says, I do things in a certain way. But he gave people, there's a concept of Vi'arat HaRa Mikirbecha, remove the evil from your midst. It's something that we're supposed to do. That this is what Moshe Rabbeinu was doing here when he was saying to them, no merit should go on their part. And yes, would Hashem have done it? No. But the tzaddik has the ability to get Hashem to do it, and he's doing it for the purpose of ridding the world of evil. Okay. Don't have a lot of time left. Let's see what we can. I want to try to get in one more idea. Okay. Now, if we return back to the beginning of the parsha. Parsha begins. Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kohath ben Levi v'dasan v'aviram b'nei Eliyav v'im Pelas b'nei Ruvein. Gives us Korach's lineage. So it tells us his father, grandfather, great-grandfather, and that's where he stops. Stops by Levi, no mention of Yaakov. As Rashi says, Yaakov already asked before he died that when this takes place, his name should not be mentioned there. Now, we find another place in the Chumash that we will have later on, and this is going to be by the B'nai Slavcha. The B'nai Slavcha is in Parshas Pinchas. And the Parshas Pinchas, take a look on page 886. Vatikrav b'nei Slavchad, ben Chefer, ben Gilad, ben Lachar, ben Menashe, Mishpachas Menashe, ben Yosef. The b'nei of the daughters of Slavchad, the son of Chefer, the son of Gilad, son of Lachar, son of Menashe, of the family of Menashe, son of Yosef. Goes all the way back. Tells all the yichas all the way back to Yosef. Rashi says, why are we going all the way back to Yosef? So Rashi says, Lama Nemar, like for Nemar ben Menashe, Eloloimar, Eloloimar lach Yosef chibib es ha'aretz, Shemelisim es ha'tzmaisai, Ubenoisav chibib es ha'aretz, Shemar tenu lanu achuza. Met chashu yukulim tzadikim, Koshkomi shemaisav, Umaisav oisav, Sistumim, Apart lach ha'akasav, Echmeyem liachso l'shvach, where he's a tzadik ben tzadik. Okay, basically, what's happening here is that by the doors of Tzlavchad, we go all the way back to Yosef to say that what motivated these girls to say that even though we have no, my father died, he has no sons, and therefore he's going to lose his portion of the land. Give us the land. It's not about saying we want a piece of land, but if they're following the footsteps of their great-great-grandfather Yosef. Yosef loved Eretz Yisrael, which is why he said, make sure I'm buried in Eretz Yisrael. Bring my remains back to Eretz Yisrael. That love of Moshe, that love of Eretz Yisrael that Yosef had, came out in his great-great-great-granddaughters when they said, give us a piece of land. It wasn't about ownership of land. It wasn't about money. It was about chibav eretz, about loving Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so when you go through this whole lineage, you're really trying to say, at the end of the line, the source of what's happening now is that that person at the beginning of the line. Yaakov's name is left out because Yaakov is saying, what happens here by Korach, that's not about me. I'm not there because it has nothing to do with me. But who is there? Levi. He's the last one mentioned. That would seem, that would imply that Levi had something to do with Korach. Okay. Well, Levi had something to do with it. So now, how do we explain how Levi was a cause of the sin of Korach? Like I say, I don't have a lot of time. I'd like to say it longer, but I'll try to get it in. So I saw this explanation from Rabbi Yehuda Vakshal. He's one of the he's one of the Rashivas in the Mir Yeshiva in Yerushalayim. And he said the following explanation. When Yaakov, before Yaakov was died, he gave his sons blessings. Shimon and Levi didn't get a blessing. They were actually chastised for their killing out the city of Shechem. And what it says there, Shimon and Levi achim, Shimon and Levi are brothers, klei chamas mechei reseyem. Their tools are stolen tools. Which Rashi says means that when they went there and killed out the city of Shechem, whose tools did they steal? Whose trait did they follow? They follow the trait of Esav. Esav's trait is killing. By killing the city of Shechem, they were following in the ways they took the tools. They took the tools of Esav. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Levis points out that Yaakov does not necessarily chastise them for killing the people of Shechem. Because as the Ramban says, the people of Shechem were chayev misa. We're not going to get into it right now. But they were liable to be punished. The problem was the way they punished them. The way they did it. I'm not sure what other way they could have done. But the way they did it is by taking a sword and killing everybody. You know, then have a bris. Then taking a sword, having them all be killed. That was Esav's way of doing things. That was Esav's way of doing things. So it wasn't, they deserved to be killed. But the way you did it, you were basically taking Esav's weapons, Esav's tools, and not using the kind of tools that you, children of Yaakov, should have been using. So it's not about the killing itself, but in the sense of killing those people, but the fact of how they did it. And the fact that they were using the tools of Esav. Now, the point, the thing is that we could have learned this to mean, to understand, that the problem is, you're acting like Esav. But if Levi and Shimon, or Levi, apparently the focus here is on Levi, if Levi acted like Esav, then Rabbi Vakshal suggests that when you go and start basically acting like someone else, that means that you don't value yourself. There's something about your own self. Why are you borrowing? Why are you taking somebody else's way of doing things? Look in yourself, see who you are, see what your abilities are, and work with that. Why aren't you valuing yourself? A person who has to now go take other people's things means that he doesn't have a very strong sense of self. There's something lacking in his sense of self if he's going to somebody else's things. Because if you have a sense of yourself and you do and you realize who you are and you do things because of who you are, then there's no reason. Then you don't go to other people's things. You don't take other people's things. You don't follow other people's ways of doing things. So when a person is jealous, let's say like Korach was, right? A person who's jealous is a person who's lacking a strong sense of self. Mm-hmm. Because what do you care about what somebody else has? What's wrong with you and what you have? What's wrong with you and what Rebbeinu Shlomo has given you? So what we're saying here is that Levi's act, when Levi went and took the tools of Esav, that showed, now that wasn't a jealousy, but it showed a lack of Levi's sense of self. If he now goes and takes Esav's thing, look at yourself, work with yourself. You don't need to go and take somebody else's thing. That was the root of what would eventually come out later in Korach's jealousy. Right? What was not didn't start as a jealousy, but a lack of a sense of self led eventually to a sense of jealousy on Korach's part, where his lack of sense of self, his lack of self-value led him to become jealous of what he didn't have. And therefore, that's what I want to suggest, the connection between Levi and between Levi and the sin of Korach.